All right. Hi, everyone. Happy Emacs Conf. I am so excited to be here. It's surreal to be part of the conference itself in addition to being a viewer. Emacs Conf is like Christmas to me, and I am so excited when it comes around every year. Today, my talk is on a programming methodology that I've created, discovered, stumbled upon. I call it Book Club Tapas. Before we get into that, let me introduce myself. My name is Maddie Sullivan, and my pronouns are she, her. I go by the handle Elephant Ergonomics, which is shortened down to Elephant Ergo in the IRC. You can reach out to me after the talk for questions, comments, or just to say hello by reaching out to hello@elephantergonomics.com. So, this software development strategy I found. It's inspired by literate programming and agile. So what exactly is Book Club Tapas? Book Club Tapas is a conversation that you have with yourself. It's a log and a ledger of your intentions, hopes, dreams, and what you've learned over the course of development. Book Club Tapas is an oracle you can consult about the state of and the strategies behind your development process. Book Club Tapas is also a peer programming partner that helps you decide how to best put forward your efforts and how to best pull together what you're working on. Book Club Tapas will also help you to understand how to tailor scope to your needs and how to have the best parts of your program shine through clearly. Book Club Tapas consists of two parts, Book Club and Tapas. But what does that mean exactly, though? Book Club is a reverse literate development strategy. Book Club is a time for you to write and then read and reflect. It's like a book club, but it's for your program. Instead of inserting narration into your code to narrativize what you're accomplishing, you are instead inserting snippets of code into your narrative to make it come alive. So, what are we narrativizing exactly? What sort of story are we telling? Book Club is the story of you, your program, and how your efforts are allowing your program to come into the world. Software developers naturally have to wear a lot of different hats and take on a lot of different roles. We apply ourselves into a lot of different contexts. We do research, interface architecture design, mathematics, philosophy. We take in the world around us and then build abstractions to model it. We translate the abstract into the concrete, and then when we're trying to teach software how to be smart, we translate the concrete back into the abstract. I can't help but feel like so much of what makes software development difficult is just trying to remember and keep track of everything. We have to try and remember so many different implementational details. We have to remember how our own code works, how the API of our dependencies work, how relevant real-world constraints behave, what the standards lay out, and how our data structures are laid out. When we're debugging, we simultaneously have to remember how our program is currently behaving, as well as how the program ought to behave in order to get a chance to reconcile that gap. It's honestly all way too much. We need a ledger of what we're actually doing in order to stay sane. I think a really effective way to make sense of things that are complex and important is to narrativize them, to turn them into stories. This is a strategy that humans have been using for a long time. Mnemonic devices, metaphors, and drawing parallels are all different ways of doing just this. Telling stories helps us to understand things that are big and complex by grounding them in our own experience and making it fit into our scale. Because the way that everyone naturally tells stories is going to be a little different, because the details that strike us as important and worth focusing on are going to be different for different people, I'm not going to say that there are hard and fast rules about how book club should work, because how it should work is however it best fits your needs. Different people and different projects have different backgrounds and mindsets, and I don't think it's my place to say what strategy is correct as a universal law. You know, because Book Club Tapas is, after all, just something I've sort of stumbled into. Book Club is intrinsically ad hoc. My providing a prescription of strategy is basically going to begin and end with the idea that you write a reverse literate document that illustrates how you've gone about writing your program. But all of that being said, I'm going to talk about how I've laid out my book club files and why I think this is a solid place from which to get started. So my stock off-the-shelf suggestions for just getting started is to have sections for our overarching goal, our development goals, a place for scratch work, a test suite, research, and then finally sections for variables, functions, and macros. So we have our starter kit sections. How do we go about using them? How do we get started? Well, we write them, you know, out in our org document, but then what do? We start by writing what we know. We have a spark, a vision. We had the beginning of an idea of what we wanted our program to do. Alternatively, maybe we had a client lay our goals out. Either way, we have some idea of how we want our program to be shaped. Let's start by writing that down. What are we trying to do? What is our goal? After that, we're probably wondering to ourselves, okay, we have our goal, but how do we get there? That's when we start writing our development focuses. If we have bursts of intuition about what functions to write, questions that we want to answer through research, we start enumerating those every time they hit us. Our goal is to write them all down in a checklist in order to turn them from daydreams into courses of action. If we aren't having development focuses hit us right away, that's okay. If we just stare at the goal for long enough, I think it's inevitable that the muse will speak and we'll get a clear lead on a path forward. So, now what? Now that we have our development focuses, we want to go ahead and create the rest of the headings for ourselves so we can act upon them. We go ahead and write the rest of the file structure ad hoc in a way that will serve our needs for now. If it's not fitting us well later on, we can just go ahead and change it. There's no pressure. That's the beauty of having this all be in a plain org document. If we're doing something consistently, we probably want to have a heading for it. We'll go ahead and create homes for our variables, our functions, our macros. We'll want to create a spot for scratch work to sort of like stretch our legs and lament in a stream of consciousness sort of format about how a particular piece of design ought to work. Basically, anytime we wear a different hat or we take on a different role as a developer, it's worth considering creating a category for it. The best way for us to figure out what headings to fill in and how to fill them in is to just go ahead and act upon our development goals. If we have a question we want to answer, we'll want to create a research heading so we can go ahead and have a spot for a scratch work for reasoning things out. If we want to write the first draft of a function we want, we'll want to create a heading for functions and then a subheading for that function in particular. So now that we've filled in our sections, what do we do now? Our idea for a program has been turned into a story, but what does that actually get us? To me, a lot of what's exciting about Book Club is that novelization goes in and a peer programming partner comes out. As we loop through reviewing our document, as we scan it up and down, we're able to engage in conversationality with our past self because of how verbose we've been in our notes. We can ask our past self questions and get back answers. We've turned our past self into a peer programming partner. If we're wondering what to do next, we can check our development focuses. If we're wondering how something works, we can read documentation embedded in our function drafts. Or we can read the outcomes of tests that we've performed in our research. We can ask ourselves questions and get answers. Some of what's most exciting about peer programming to me is having fresh perspective and alternate context. We have a fresh set of eyes on the program that aren't our own. And with that set of eyes comes someone else to share the burden of trying to remember everything. With Book Club, instead of having a peer programmer that exists in physical space, we have one that's, to get all sci-fi for a moment, reaching forward towards us from backward in time. We're asynchronously working with our past selves as an equal role collaborative partner in development. We have their perspective, their fresh memories of the code as it was written, and their focus on what was worth worrying about at a different point in time. We can ask them questions and get answers. We can ask them questions like, well, what do I do now? How does this data structure work? What types does this third-party library take? By asking these questions, I can even stay fresh on development progress that I last touched months ago. It's really easy to duplicate work, forget how things work, lose track of priorities. Book Club helps keep us focused. It keeps us accountable. It even keeps us company. One of the most immediately useful things about Book Club, in my opinion, is that we immediately have a list of actionable items. Every time I have a little pain point, I go ahead and write it down, and I write down all of the things that would be nice to have done someday. So, you might be wondering, and it's fair to wonder this, isn't this effectively just the GitHub issue model? We're listing out bug requests, issue requests, feature requests. It's not exactly a new idea, and it's pretty intuitive. I think the important consideration here is that having really formalized apparatus for entering in our thoughts can be an unnecessary source of friction. Bug listings don't tend to be a great fit for daydreaming or verbose considerations of philosophy. Bug listings tend to be reserved for catastrophes. I feel like a lot of the tooling that we currently use really struggles with creating ergonomics that make taking frictionless notes difficult. We have systems where all the disparate parts of what we're working on feel really far away from each other. We're pushed away from engaging in conversations with ourselves as a result of how disparate all of our tooling feels, how the process of working with it is incongruent. My hope is that we can instead engage with a process that makes it really trivial to write impulsive journaling about what we're doing. So much of design is ultimately just daydreaming. Good ideas tend to strike us hard in a momentary flash of inspiration, and then they fade just as quickly. Anyone who's had an idea all at once in the middle of the night knows that they're going to have to choose between either committing to writing it down or accept that by morning they'll have lost it. If we're not writing what strikes us as important at the same moment that it's happening, we're going to lose it. It's not realistic to expect ourselves to hold onto our ideas forever with the same precision as when we were first inspired. Okay. I'm going to call you out real quick. If I ask all of you, who wants to read really excellent documentation? I imagine that everyone here is raising their hand. We want code to make sense, and we want to know what the original developer had in mind. Even the original developer themselves would want this just for their own sake. I know that for me, I can even feel things becoming less fresh just after a couple months away from my code base. And that was me from a couple months ago. They're not around anymore. Now, here's the rough part. Here's what I'm really gonna call you all out. Who wants to write really excellent documentation? Now, I don't know what's happening on your end, but I'm imagining crickets, silence, tumbleweeds blowing through to the horizon. It's a tough ask. It's not generally all that rewarding. If you're writing docs from scratch, a lot of it involves relearning the intentions behind crusty old code. For me, it hurts to not spend that same time implementing bug fixes and new features. It just doesn't feel like a great use of my time. Even if it's strictly for my own codebase, for my own use, it's hard to sit down and do it even when I know how much I would benefit from it. My thinking is that when you write rough, piecewise daydreaming as you go, it's so much easier to not only begin writing documentation early in your process, but also to stay consistent about not slouching into an accumulation of a backlog. So not only does writing documentation early make us more likely to keep that habit going, but it also makes the documentation we do write way more robust. when fiction meets reality and we start writing out code that is constrained by the real world and not just our imagination, we learn that things we assumed about our design aren't going to work out in practice. Because of this, we can enter into a sort of situation akin to boiling a frog in a pot of water. Frogs don't notice that they're being boiled if the water is only heated gradually enough. We decide to adjust our design only a little bit without changing the documentation right away. Doing that once is fine, but I don't believe for a second that we're only going to do it once. We can find ourselves surprised that as time goes on, our code looks nothing like our spec, and we lose the thread of what our code was supposed to do in the first place. When we stake our intentions clearly and early, you ground yourself in them. You reduce the risk of straying from them. You have clear reference for what you want your code to do, and you reduce the risk of having its purpose shift over time. When we take turns alternating between writing code and documentation rather than acting, you know, as having it all as one step, we risk taking turns just moving our goalpost back and forth. So we've seen how book club files get us all sorts of amazing features and practical benefits, but we might be starting to notice a pattern as we continue to engage in conversation and work with our document and watch it grow in size. We originally created our book club file with the hope to reduce what we would need to keep track of and to reduce our level of overwhelm. We might find that as our book club file grows, we're encountering more detail than we can practically parse, manage, and decipher intention from. It can be easy to enter into a situation where we're drowning in the breadth of our notes, and in doing so, we've recreated the same problem we originally set out to solve. Writing out every single detail helps us a lot to make sense of things at first, but then after a while, we can encounter a signal-to-noise problem when we try to make meaning from too many details. This is where tapas come in. So tapas, in Spanish cuisine, are appetizers. What's notable about tapas is that you can bring a bunch of them together to make a full meal. In the context of book club tapas, they serve a similar role. The idea is that we write flavorful libraries that together form a full program. We have a full program, but it's made from discrete modules. The idea behind tapas is that instead of creating one perfect, solves-everything code base, we want to create a whole bunch of separate libraries that themselves nail a specific subdomain. And once these libraries are all brought together, they form the whole that we're seeking. Once our book club file becomes big enough such that we feel like our scope can be split into multiple libraries, that's when we want to take the opportunity to split our program up into parts, into tapas. So, maybe one of the best ways to understand what makes a good tapa is to first examine what does not make a good tapa. The single most important thing to understand about tapas is that they themselves are substantial. There's a lot of back and forth on the idea of microlibraries, their merits, their dangers, and when, where they kind of work best. I think the distinction that I would like to draw is that I think that tapas belong in the larger end of scale and complexity for microlibraries, rather than the smaller end. I think particularly small helpers, like NPM's isAud, are a good example of something I think does not constitute a good tapa. Meanwhile, I think Python's request library is a really good example of a tapa. I believe requests only does HTTP connections, but I feel like that's not so simple and straightforward that you can just go ahead and implement it on your own real quick. A real danger of creating helper libraries that are too small is that we don't remove abstraction nearly as much as we postpone it. If our libraries are small, but the glue code that binds them is large, we haven't done anything to reduce complexity or employ abstraction in a meaningful way. If all of the complexity exists in our glue code, we've simply replaced our functions with libraries of the same size and purpose. Our code base is still monolithic instead of having meaningfully divided scope. I think that a good TAPA ought to feel like augmentations or extensions to the standard library. You know, maybe something kind of akin to Scheme's Surfy system. I think that the goal of good TAPAs is not to solve a particular problem, but instead to solve a particular class of problem. The goal of a well-written TAPA is to solve needing to do hard work in general, rather than solving what can only really be an individual need of an individual program. I feel like TAPAs are most helpful when we instead seek to solve a larger, overarching problem that intersects with the problem space of our codebase. When we have a handful of TAPAs that are roughly the same size and scale, the glue code that marries them is also roughly the same size and scale. As a heuristic, I try to aim for any function being approximately 3 calls in length, and then any TAPA being between like 6 and 12 function calls, between 6 and 12 functions in length. The number of TAPAs themselves can be as many or as few as you need, but then your TAPAs can split into their own separate TAPAs as needed. My hope is that the collection of our TAPAs, especially as we create dependency chains among them, is that each next TAPA is a trivial case of the one prerequisite to it. Every TAPA is a meaningful, human-readable abstraction that enables us to feel confident about our tooling without drowning in detail. The whole stack can be understood by humans, but we only have to focus on any one piece of it at a time, rather than focusing on the entire stack all at once. We can practically achieve a huge final product, but each individual step in working towards that goal is still at a human scale. One thing I want to make sure to point out explicitly real quick is that having access to a hygienic macro system like the ones that we have in Lisps makes for an amazing experience for creating TAPAs. The types of abstractions that we can do by modifying syntax at compile time makes for incredibly intuitive and ergonomic tooling. So we've talked quite a bit about what I think makes a TAPA good, but I think maybe the best way to understand the concept is to have a look at the whole workflow in practice. I've been working on this currently unnamed ELISP program recently. It's a validator for the file tags lines of my org mode files. So I have org mode files under my directory, under my documents directory, organized in this hierarchical way, and the nested directories have meaningful names. I want the headers of my org files to be tagged in accordance with the sequence of the names of the directories. So I do this by having a file tags line at the top of the file, just list the path segments in order. So if I have an org file in the directory tilde documents foo bar, the file tags line has the tags foo and bar. This is totally fine to do by hand, but I want a program that recursively searches through my directories to validate that the tags are correct, because it's easy to drop something. This scale of problem is actually kind of perfect for demonstrating how Book Club TAPAs work in action. We have a problem that's mostly rather simple, but it has a lot of moving pieces. We want to iterate over directories recursively. We want to do string manipulation. We want to parse buffers, and we want to edit buffers. All of these tasks are simple enough on their own, but it's deceptively easy to start tripping over ourselves when we feel like it's necessary to do all of these different things in one step. So, there are a ton of great string manipulation tools for Emacs. So that's checked off, that's done, taken care of. I'm still kind of daydreaming about writing a wrapper around some of the, you know, Emacs standard libraries for directory traversal, just to make it a little bit nicer to work with. But the big thing that really struck me as odd is that there doesn't seem to be a great tooling for destructuring Emacs buffers beyond just chaining together a bunch of editor commands. Emacs is so buffer-oriented, I feel like it really deserves a good library for programmatic buffer destructuring. I looked around for a bit, but I couldn't really find anything. So, you know, at the end of the day, I could definitely just grit my teeth and put my head down and just use tools that feel cumbersome to work with if I wanted to. I could write something that's good enough just for the purpose of my package and then hide it deep inside the code base. I could absolutely do that. But I can't help but think about how after I properly write the tooling I'm missing, I'm really going to be thanking myself in terms of reduced implementational complexity, reduced bug hunting, real reusability, and ultimately really just a deep sense of pride in knowing that I took the time to do something in a way that feels right. This right here is the perfect time to split off Tapas. Anytime that we find ourselves reaching for a fictional dependency, wishing that someone had written a library like this, we can take that opportunity to remember that we are someone. We can write that library ourselves, and we deserve to write that library, because we deserve to get to use it. So, I'm going to briefly show a book club buffer for a program called Squint. It's the buffer destructurer that I've been talking about, and it's real. It's a wrapper around Emacs's narrowing functionality and regular expression search. It's not totally done, and we'll likely see some breaking changes, but I really like where it is. I'll be posting it in its current state on some of the big source repository sites relatively soon. I think it has a good future, which is really quite exciting, and it'll likely probably get split off into its own Tapas. We'll see. No matter what, I do recommend being on the lookout for it, because I think it'll be a really excellent demonstration of some of the solid ideas behind how to get rolling with Book Club Tapas. So I have my background section where I'm basically just sort of laying out what the objective is for the program. I have my vision where I'm doing some daydreaming about how this all ought to work. I date stamp this, as you can see. It's from a while ago, but I still have the full context of, all the things that I've done working on this. I listed out a bunch of ideas for different forms, for functions, macros. I did different pieces of research. Yeah, I was trying to figure out for the with restriction macro, what types does it take? And I did a whole bunch of tests to try and ultimately figure it out. Because it claims in the documentation, I believe, that it will just take any type for labels. But in my testing, that's not ultimately what I found. The results of my tests is that symbols, numbers, they work. Strings do not. I'm not sure why that is, but for my purposes, this is what I need to know. I have my development focuses here, so I have my assorted goals for different directions I want to take the program. And then lastly, I have, my functions, my macros. And this right here is the titular macro. This is the, ultimately the big meat of the program. And it's all contained, happily organized, inside my book club file. I'm quite happy with it. I think it looks really nice. So what else does Book Club Tapas do? I don't know. It probably does a lot of stuff. Does all sorts of stuff that I don't know about yet, but this is where you come in. I'm really excited to see what people do when they take these ideas and run with them. And if you have something really cool you're doing with it, please email me and come talk to me about it. I'd love to hear about it. Again, my email is hello@elephantergonomics.com. So last, before we wrap up, I want to go ahead and give a quick plug for my services. I am an independent software engineer that has an emphasis in backend design and general automation. In particular, I have an emphasis in that really cool new generative AI thing that everyone's been talking about recently. If you have a headache, you have some sort of pain point for your small or large business, you wish you could just wiggle your nose and have disappear, come talk to me. I'll make it disappear. I love doing that. Reach out to me at hello@elephantergonomics.com. If you think that Book Club Tapas would be a great fit for your team and your project, I'd love to hop on and help you get the ball rolling quickly. go ahead and email me at hello@elephantergonomics.com. Lastly, if you're a member of the larger Lisp community and you want to fund independent software development for things that really excite you, for passion projects that make our ecosystem richer, I'd love to look into accepting independent funding so I can commit more hours toward making that happen. Some of the projects that I want to work on are a Python foreign function interface for Guile Scheme, a framework for rapidly creating simulation games that feels just as simple as writing Emacs configurations. Want to work on getting a full graphical web browser inside of Emacs. And I want to finish programs like Swint. These are just some of the projects I want to work on, but I need funding to do so. If you want to see these things happen, send me an email at hello@elephantergonomics.com with both your intention to pledge a monthly contribution, as well as clarification, a sort of vote on which project you would like to see me prioritize. I would love to have folks reach out for any of these reasons. I would just love to talk to you. Thank you so much for watching. I really hope that the talk was interesting, and I'm really excited to see your thoughts and questions right now in the Q&A. Thank you so much for watching. Bye.